Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, October 10th. It's also known as Columbus Day, at least in 2016. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have a great show for you, Tori. And because we have great guests in the studio. They've been here several times before. And they're also going to come up next right after this show, right here live on this channel. So so you're going to get 2 hours of them. And we're going to get to them in just a few minutes. We just want to, a couple things. Well, we had the second debate last night, and everybody's got something to say about it. I mean, Facebook, you can't find a post that's not political this morning.
No, very true.
In the news media as well, everything is, wow, look at the headline now. Ryan turns away from Trump.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and that's why I posted last night, I said, this race is over. It's already been decided tonight. Hillary's got it by, like, you know, when he opened his mouth for the first time, the first question, and he did not answer the question. When they asked him, do you feel you can be like a role model for Americans? And he's like, ISIS, ISIS, ISIS. And I'm like, I cringed.
Yeah.
I cringed. And that's why I understood you when you posted about pushing your head into the pillow.
Yeah.
Because that's what I wanted to do.
To be honest, everyone I know, Republican, Democrat, undecided, it was just America just cringed the whole night. People said they had to take a Xanax. Honestly, the amount of my heart was racing out of my chest. And I told, I looked at my husband, I'm like, when is this over? And what's interesting is that it became sort of, people are saying, a low point in politics. The low point. But, you know, there's always been low points in American politics. But it was a bad night for politics. And there's a really famous tweet going on that says, 9 months from now, no children will be born. Because it was just not a sexy, fun, it was a weird night for just everybody. And it was really uncomfortable. And I was very uncomfortable. Even if you had the sound off, the way the body language was very uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and it made me,
I think, as a
woman, but it felt.
Because you also felt they put him on the spot. But he really didn't have anything to say about it. The thing is this, though. Let's put the debate on hold for a few minutes because we're going to totally talk about this with our guests and everything. I know they want to pitch in and all that. But I did want to bring up just the fact that you changed your venue on Saturday night, right? What happened there?
I was at the Comedy Store.
Yeah, and you were supposed to be at the Viper Room. So I gather it was a big deal, right? In other words, for you, it was moving up.
So
you gave up the Viper Room to go to the Comedy Store. Wow. Look at this. Miss in demand here.
Hello.
Yeah. So, and I promised I would come. But you know what, Tori? I realized it's like every time I go alone, sometimes I go, well, I can't find anybody to go with. I'll go alone, right?
Totally.
Every time I do, I regret it. Okay.
Dude, it's also 10:30 at night. I was
exhausted. 10:30. And
so
I said,
I get
to
it.
Drive all the way to Sunset. No, but I really want to see you. So we'll see.
Another time.
I'll try.
Another
time. I mean, my I couldn't get anybody to go that late.
No, it's, I mean, I had to take a nap before I went on, so I get it.
Really?
Yes.
So how did it go? Good.
Oh, I killed.
Good crowd?
Great crowd. I killed. And it was hard because I went up after a guest drop-in, so you're always worried because the audience is like, now that guy was good.
Really?
And then I'm like, hey! but no, I killed. I did great.
Awesome.
Very, very great.
I'm glad to hear. So you were like Comedy Store caliber easily.
Oh, by far.
Now, was that the main room? Or the
belly room. Belly room is the one that's upstairs. I've done the main room a lot. I've never done the original room, which is really where the stars go to.
Right.
Like, I think Chris Rock and Louis C.K. had dropped in that night. They go to the original room. I've done the main room a lot. And then the belly room is where Robin Williams got his career. Every Sunday he did this show and he was like this crazy weird guy. The belly room is really small and sort of disjointed, but it's a good crowd. If you get a good crowd, it's loud. So it's good for me. So
good.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the Robin Williams vibe will rub up on you.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, you know. But I'd like to see you do a routine. Now, if people want to, they don't live here. Are you like on YouTube and stuff?
I don't put my, because I want to be a host.
Okay.
And I do get a little dirty on stage. they call it blue. I don't like to post too much of it because it is pretty dirty.
Okay.
But I am cleaning it up a little bit. But I do have a reel out there and on my Facebook and torishulman.com. You can watch it.
There you go. Yeah. You see, so you guys can get an idea. But yeah, she feels she's more funny when she's blue, so we'll have to listen
or,
to
yeah,
that.
Or, right? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. My stand-up...
Well, that's what you prefer, I guess.
It's like Beyonce and Sasha Fierce, you know, her alter ego. It's like, I get a little dirty, yeah, but I'm doing stand-up. I don't know. Because, you know, guys do get dirty, so it's like, you gotta compete.
That's what true,
I mean,
I
like,
guess,
rainbows
in a way,
and
right?
puppies. Ha, 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 bye!
And I think it's even funnier when women use dirty language and stuff.
I don't think it's funny when they use it for being dirty.
Right.
But I have a great joke about a salad and a cucumber, and that's funny because it's like, yeah. So anyway, but I wonder, you have to come to see me.
I guess, yeah. It's usually when you tell a joke that's being told in stand-up, it's not as funny, right? You have to do it as part of
when
your
someone
routine.
Says, do a joke. I'm like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't work like that.
Because everyone's drunk and it's, you know, everyone has their night out pants on. You know what I mean? So it's different.
Yeah, I know. Well, anyway, so I guess more flooding now in North Carolina, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like as high as the stop sign I'm seeing here.
Yeah.
And Wow. I mean, all the news is all about last night and stuff. So you know what? Let's just get into that.
Yeah.
Let's bring in our guest now.
Woo!
And even before we get to the debate, we're going to find out a little bit about him. So we have Matt Polacek and Alan Cardoza in the studio. Welcome
Woo-hoo!
To the show, guys.
Glad to be here again.
Thank you for having us.
These guys are like the most awesome men you'll ever meet. And that's why every time I catch them in the hallway, I'm like, you guys gotta come back on the show. So there you go. And we're more or less from the same generation too, right? So we can relate and stuff. And Tori's like, what are you talking about?
No.
But I'm just telling you about the little bromance we have here.
I see. I'm feeling the love, man.
Yeah, there you go. You see, it's nice to, and that's the thing also is that's to prove that in LA there's a lot of great people and you can make a lot of great friends, and the city just gets a very bad rap for nothing, you know. I mean, it's true, there's a lot of like attitude and stuff going on, you know, and people that are flaky and all that. But do you guys, have you experienced like meeting good people here for the most part?
Absolutely. And I've traveled all over the world. And you know what? You'll find great people everywhere, and you'll find flaky people
everywhere.
Right?
I agree. You know, we're so fortunate. You know, we build communities and, you know, through schools and through other things with our kids. But I think people in LA are great. And I'm happy to be here and have no interest of ever moving.
Yeah. Now, have you always been here, Matt? I mean, were you born here?
I grew up in Long Beach, which is about 20 miles south. And I always had this kind of idea of LA as very pretentious and very kind of obnoxious. And we moved here. I was in the Manhattan Beach for a while, and then moved up to LA with my wife, I guess about 8-9 years ago.
Oh.
And it's wonderful. I mean, the people.
So it's funny because you guys in Long Beach looked at LA as like not part of you, right? You're not part of LA.
Yeah.
And you looked at it differently. Wow, that's pretty interesting, because when people say LA, sometimes Long Beach is part of the equation, you know? It just comes with the territory.
Well, on my end, I live behind the orange curtain.
Yes, he does.
I never heard that. That's funny.
The OC. You never heard of
No, I haven't heard the curtain.
Yes.
That's what some of my LA friends say. They go, why do you live in Huntington Beach? And I go, because I can.
Exactly.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Why would I live in LA when I can live in paradise, for crying out loud? I mean, Huntington is beautiful. How long have you lived there, Alan?
Wow. 40 years. I mean, most of my life.
So, and where did you grow up?
I grew up in Pasadena. And in Huntington Beach.
Oh, wow. So that's cool. So you managed to realize, I don't want to be right in L.A. Let me move outside. And I still can take advantage of everything that's going on here, right?
Absolutely.
And besides, what you do is like it takes you everywhere in the world. Tell us just a little bit about what it is that you do. You guys will find it fascinating. You should go back to shows where we had Alan and Matt on the show. But today we'll talk a little bit about what it is that they do. Of course, they have a show here called Answers for the Family that's following this show today. And so, Alan, tell us a little bit about what it is that you do.
Well, I'm an international detective, so I travel all over the world. I break up human trafficking rings, return parentally abducted children, most any type of investigation. More locally, we work with at-risk youth. So we have a company that contracts with school districts, county mental health, juvenile justice. But the focus is taking young people who have made some mistakes and taking them somewhere where they can deal with those mistakes. And I think a good example is I was on a plane about a month ago, and I was taking a young person to a program. And this woman sitting next to me looked at me, and she goes, I know you. I know you. Wow. You're that guy that takes those bad kids to those programs. And I said, excuse me, but
I said,
you must be mistaken. And she said, what do you mean? And I said, I'm that guy that takes young people who have made some bad choices to good programs.
Mic drop. I bet she was like, oh, bye.
Exactly. Yeah.
So embarrassing.
Yeah. Now go sit somewhere else.
Yeah, right. Bad kids. She's like, I'm in the middle. Excuse me. That's great.
Yeah. But that's amazing. So you find kids, you try to bring them back home, or at least, like you said, to programs.
Exactly.
Where they can rehabilitate and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Sound well, you know, this is like an Indiana Jones type of thing, but modern day, you know.
Totally.
And I mean, this guy gets to travel, he gets to meet people, risky situations at times too, right, Alan?
Sometimes. But I mean, from my standpoint, what other people think is risky, I don't think is risky, because if you prepare properly, you're not really taking a risk. Mm.
So let me ask you this. Let's say a man, you find out that this child predator or something seduce this girl, whatever, you know, this little girl and stuff, and then pimped her out, okay? And now the question is, this guy's armed and stuff. You're trying to get the kid. Isn't that dangerous? Isn't that risky?
I mean, yes, it can be dangerous, but in most cases, we're going to put somebody undercover. We're going to put somebody in that's going to act like they're one of them to be able to get close. Oh. And a good example, and one of my partners that you've met, Logan,
yes,
there's a case where he was undercover. I was in a van, and I've got a headset on, and Logan is mic'd, so I'm listening to everything that's being said. And Logan says to this guy, you know, so, you know, what got you into this type of thing? And the guy said, well, I used to deal cocaine. He says, but once I realized that I can sell cocaine once, but I can sell a woman over and over again, I switched to human trafficking.
Wow, wow,
did you, like, what did you do with the earphones? What, did you just, like, gasp?
I mean,
you're, like, in a movie, like a bad movie, like a badly written, shitty movie.
Exactly. Wow. And Logan had said it was all he could do not to reach over and rip the guy's throat out.
Yeah, right? Yeah, wow. Oh. People are like that. I mean, predators... you can't even call them human beings because look at how many lives you destroy, you know, souls that you destroy, spirits that of people and kids, you know, young kids. So I don't think anything is more despicable than that, you know.
Yep.
So that's what Alan does and tries to minimize that, and that's cool. And and before we get to what Matt does, I wanted to ask you, and you told me before the show too, you guys can find just about anybody, right?
Yes.
I want you to find a 20... Not a 20-year-old girl. She was 20 when I was 20. Now she's 57.
Okay, that's better.
Okay, for
what did you really mean?
For a minute, I thought you wanted us to help. You wanted us to help you with your dating.
I think he is. I think it's coming up.
As soon as he said 20, I was worried.
Yeah, maybe that's a Freudian slip there or something. Oh, but God. No. No, we were 20 when we were together, and we lived in Las Vegas at the time. We were like friends / smoochers, okay? Mm-hmm. I never took it further than that, which was like a major fail on my part. But I was 20 years old, you know? But the thing is, I still want to find her, you know? I want to know what happened to her.
Is that stalking, though?
No. She doesn't have to know anything. I mean, they're just going to go, lives here now.
Yeah, sounds way creepier. She doesn't have to know.
Here she is on Facebook. Yeah. No, here she's on Facebook.
Yeah. It's okay. He's a celebrity.
Yeah,
because
true.
She must have changed her names a few times.
Well, yeah. And, you know, we get cases like that. And what we do when somebody calls us and says, I want you to find this person. I used to know them in this case, you know, 30 years ago or something. And I was in love with them. We go, great. But here's our condition. We will find them. We will contact them. We will tell them this is who wants to find you.
Okay.
And if you want, we'll give them the information. So that's what we do internally.
That's
so that
good.
So that we're not helping the stalker.
Totally.
Yes.
Totally. She doesn't have to know.
Yeah.
No, but wouldn't you be flattered if someone when you were 20, an early good relationship? No.
And I know
wanted
this is
to know what happened to you?
This is a man and
really?
A woman thing. Anybody trying to find me in any capacity is absolutely creepy.
You
I have to be honest.
It's not. And that's funny to me because you like the attention.
Of course
stuff,
I do,
right?
But I don't want people finding me and using third parties. And
well,
shit.
It depends for what. I mean, I'm not saying for money or anything.
No, it
but
depends
just
on
for the sake of friendship.
For private, no,
Sam. You can't stop love.
It is, right?
But just for privacy, like, I wouldn't want, even for love, I don't want anyone from my past asking someone else to find me. I don't want it. It's creepy, creepy, creepy.
Okay, well, okay, so I won't do it.
Well, but no,
I'm just
Sam,
curious
Sam.
To know what happened, because sometimes people die, you know, too, during that period.
You know what? It is something we can do, and after the show, just give me the information.
Okay, I will.
We can find her. But I need to tell you, because we've done a lot of these, there are many people out there that are happy about it. They go, oh my God, I haven't thought about them in 25 years. Yes, I would love to. And right. I did this for a relative of mine and spoke to the female, and she was like, oh, I would so much love to talk with him. So that she was
that
very happy.
Cool. That's cool.
So good.
Yeah, you never
that's
know.
Good.
I mean, we were very good friends.
That's good.
So that's what I'm saying,
you
know. And I think the major fail was that I didn't want to, well, that was my excuse at the time. I didn't want to threaten the friendship, so I didn't make any sexual moves toward her. But we did kiss and neck and stuff like that. But she must have thought, why is he stopping himself at a certain point?
When
right?
you say neck, what?
Yeah, what is
what's
that?
Neck?
Necking,
neck.
Right?
What's necking?
Well, that's what we call that at the time. Maybe that's why I'm calling it that.
No, I think
making out.
Sam,
is necking when you kiss
Sam,
the neck, or what?
You and I are the only ones
that know
that
means,
because
right?
we're a few,
wow,
we're a few semesters older than that.
Wow,
did you take her to the drive-through?
So I'm that ancient? Wow,
and the drive-in.
That's what I meant. The drive-in. Damn it, the joke was ruined.
Wow.
No poodle skirt.
I guess I haven't said I'm. We made out because it's usually like, you know, when you're an adult, as we had sex or whatever.
You necked.
Yeah, we necked. We
never
were necking.
Knew that.
Yeah. But there you go. So it never, but yeah, so I need to.
I'm so mad about the drive-in joke. God dang it. If I just said drive-in. Anyway, I'll think about that the rest of the week.
No, but I just need to find her to tell her how I feel, really felt about her.
Can
at
you
the
Facebook
time,
her,
you know?
Sam?
No, but I tried. That's what I'm saying. And I know that. Just a year or two within, after the time I knew her, she had already gotten married with a new last name. And so when I look her up online, I find some because I know what city she's originally from. I mean, we had met in Vegas in the 70s, you know, so that's a long time ago.
And the good news is most restraining orders have statutes of limitations.
So. That's exactly what I was thinking. Well,
so no, anyway, but just a little thing, just a little diversion here to say that I don't know. I miss people from the past. Some people I do. Although, you know, once you grow up, you realize, what was I doing with this person, you know? But that was a different time in your life,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Yeah. So, Matt, tell us a little bit about what it is that you do.
So right now, not right now, I'm the director at the Betty Ford Center here in West L.A., and we're really pushing out a couple new great programs. But, you know, the gist of it is building a recovery community in L.A., and we've got a great great group of people over at the Betty Ford Center. And more importantly, L.A. as a community has really responded, and we've got a lot of great community events. We have one coming this Saturday where people are turning in their medicine and their medicine cabinets and throwing them away because, as you know, a lot of people, a lot of teenagers get hooked on drugs going through their parents' medicine cabinets.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, very prevalent. I mean, even as when I was, I know I feel ancient to a lot of people, but I remember that and growing up in high school.
Yeah.
You raid the, I mean, I would do
that's
it.
Your first drug dealer.
Yeah, you raid your parents. Absolutely. And my parents had a lot of drugs. Thank God I wasn't into it. But yeah, you would raid, you'd see kids and they raid the parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting because I sometimes now want to raid my mom's medication.
I don't know what that means. I love it.
She's got some powerful
pills.
I feel you do. But I don't want to get into that part of this. You know, for me, it's like the weed will do it, you know. And I've tried a lot of drugs in the 70s, 80s, you know, cocaine and all that stuff. But nothing ever, I never connected with anything, you know. And so everybody's got their poison, but I'm glad I never got into like the chemicals.
Yeah.
You know, because, Matt, those are the killers, right?
I mean, what we're seeing now with the pain pills and the heroin.
And the Oxycontin.
And Oxycontin. And I feel like there is a big difference between that and the other stuff that we've talked about. I mean, this ends in death.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you see it with Robin Williams, whether you see it with Prince, whether you see it with some of these other big name celebrities and unfortunate for their lives, but it definitely shows us that this is a different animal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the Trojan horse. This is the killer.
Which is interesting because when I grew up in high school, I graduated high school in 2000, so I'm like I'm right there. And it wasn't a lot of coke and all of that. It was pills. Pills was the thing.
Wow.
So it's funny because the flavor of the industry just changed so quickly, and then it's so much more dangerous.
I was so, like, not cool in high school, and so I didn't know. Like, there was the group that smoked pot. you know, and
I think I was the drama stoner people. Yeah, that was me.
And we were like the athletes, you know, and there was no, I didn't even know what a, you know, what a drug was, to be honest, in high school. And I think about today and our kids and
oh my God,
the amount of knowledge they have.
Yeah, to be honest, that's true, right? And the amount of pills, like my people I know who have been prescribed them at 11. They know about Adderall, Ritalin. They know it because they've been prescribed it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like crazy to me that like it's not only just that they know it from like the back, you know, the black market or whatever. They know because their parents are like giving it to them. Yeah, and some people need it. It seems normal, right?
Totally. Like, okay, because it's legal to have it prescribed to you, whatever, you know. Wow. So, and Matt, how long have you been in the recovery?
I've been in the field for about 20 years, actually. I was a private practice psychologist for about 10, 15 years. And what I kind of learned is you can do a lot in private practice therapy and helping people, but addiction's a different animal. And there's something about being in a community and the group therapy process with addiction that's so much more effective. So I kind of felt like I was a failure in a lot of ways working with the addiction population. My background's really in young adults and youth. And so I would work with these patients and kind of hitting walls. And what I learned, I left private practice to work as a, you know, director of mental health for a big kind of rehab company called Center for Discovery. And the amount of success, you know, that people have in groups and building communities, because you can stop using drugs, but you still need to have a community and you have to change life. You know, you have to change your life, your patterns and your way of living.
Different people, right? Exactly. I mean, you don't want to be around the people you get high with.
Exactly. So for that, you know, to learn that process has been great for me. I've been with Betty Ford for now going on my second year. And what an incredible company, nonprofit. You know, that does so much good for this world, and to get to be a part of, to get paid to help people. Yeah. What better gig can you have?
What a great first lady that was, Betty Ford. Just for that. She'll never be forgotten.
Yeah, and I think to add to what Matt's saying is that over the years now, the idea of building the community has also included the parents. So one of the biggest issues in the past was that these young people would go to this program, they would learn a structure, they would get off the drugs, and they would go back home, and the parents brought on the same stresses, the same anxiety, and the same issues. And so as the community understood this, they started bringing the parents in. The parents started now going to counseling as well and learning what they can do to help the children.
Yeah, when I watch Intervention, you always see them going, we're going to the Betty Ford Center too, like the family for Al-Anon or whatever, to help them because they have to change lifestyle.
Well, and there's so much great resource. We're in L.A. We have so many great resources. Like at the Betty Ford Center, every Wednesday for free, parents can come. Community members can come. They don't have to be in treatment. It's open. Come get free services. Whoa. I mean, there's so much out there. And we talked about L.A. when we started the show about being, you know, good, bad, whatever. There's so many resources out here. And growing up, you know, I grew up in a kind of traditional Jewish family to where you're almost safer in big cities, you know, because of all the resources. And so for me, I always saw myself living in a city based on that. But the advantage, another advantage to that is you've got these resources, like you're saying. And there's, you know, there's AA groups on every corner. If you don't like AA, there's Smart Recovery. If you don't like Smart Recovery, there's Young People in Recovery. I mean, there's so many resources to where if you want to get help and you really want to change your life, it's there.
Yeah. And whether you like it or not, I think what you're saying, though, is that there are certain ways that work, right?
Yeah.
And changing your life, that's what works. And if people are not willing to do that, they can't expect much, right? And the amazing thing is, and I want to tell people, because Matt's been here several times before, and when you think of the Betty Ford Center, you many people will write it off right away. It's too pricey. But what Matt is doing is totally, I think, a great evolution for the center. And now it's affordable for people,
right? Yeah, we're in network with all major or most major insurance companies. And when you say, a lot of companies say in network, or they know, they say they take insurance companies, but they really, you know, they'll send you a super bill afterwards.
Yeah, it's like $8 million.
Really?
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. But so why are you in network? Yeah.
Exactly. But being in network, you know, and I'm on the phone with these insurance companies all the time discussing these things. But basically what that means is, you know, we've already contracted with your insurance company. So if you meet the criteria that you need help, then your help is getting paid for by the insurance
company. Exactly. And you don't have have to worry about it
exactly.
anymore.
Also, you know, as a nonprofit, we've got plenty of scholarship available. So if you, we have a test, like a, you know, litmus test or whatever, where you explain what you make per year and yada, 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 and what your resources are. And if you qualify, we'll pay for your treatment. So the, there's plenty of treatment out there. That's that can't be a barrier or an excuse.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, right. And the thing is this, is I think it's better to end up there voluntarily than if a judge sends you there, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I bet a lot of problems are like. I mean, do you get people that get sent there without, like, involuntarily?
So it's, you know, as adults, you have the choice, but there's always legal, you know, ramifications. And so we do get some people who are court-ordered. The kind of cool thing, if you'll call it cool, about some of the court-ordered stuff is a lot of those people have diversion boards. And so they have to get tested to gain something, whether it's freedom, whether it's their children back, whatever it is. And a lot of the studies and the research shows that if you're being monitored and there's accountability, you have a much better chance of staying in recovery.
I feel like that's for everything in the world. If you have someone like giving you accountability, you're going to do it better.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. So and I think addiction is a pretty serious epidemic, right? I mean, a lot of people are using it, younger and younger, and it's just sad to see a lot of good people wasting away like that. You know,
and it doesn't discriminate. You know, lawyers, doctors. You know, Tori and I were discussing before the show. During the presidential debate, which I'm sure we're going to jump into, how many ads are being run, you know, and there's the number of deaths for addiction outnumber car accident deaths in the United States.
Wow.
I mean, this is more of an epidemic. It's increasing, it's getting worse. And so we have more resources, but like we've said it here, you've got to be willing to go and want to change your life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the resources are there. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of connecting the people and then having the community, like Alan was saying, you know, to be effective, it has to be community-based. Right. And it has to be prevention-based, not treatment-based. We've got to start way, way earlier. You know, people say the money's in the medicine and the treatment, but forget the money. Let's worry about our society. We got to be more preventative. We were discussing in high schools where, you know, drugs are prevalent, you know, where in the past, you know, they weren't glorified and stuff like that. We've got a long way to go on the preventative side, and my focus would be more on that as far as, you know, education with teens and young adults and cleaning out your medicine cabinets as parents and
being aware of that, you know?
Awareness,
Yeah. Did you hear that, Mom? If she feels...
Especially when Sam comes
I'm not
over.
Taking a pill or two. They'll notice.
No,
I'm kidding. I'm way beyond that now. But no, I mean, I used to have a point if I could. I mean, there were times where, like, dentists and stuff would just dispense all this, you know, codeine and all that stuff with no problem, you know. And so, I mean, I'm talking 20, 30 years ago. It was easy.
We're catching on, Sam, though, and there's some really cool stuff coming out now. And, like, for instance, our medical doctor has a report called the CARES Report. And what the CARES Report is it tracks our patients and what prescriptions they fill. Mm. So if she wants to give a prescription to a patient, she can already see last week he filled a prescription for, you know, an opiate or for Xanax or something. So we're starting to get these systems of cross-communication so people can't doctor shop.
Yeah,
we're maybe a step behind, but we're catching up.
Mm-hmm.
Which
technology will help,
and communication will help. Mm-hmm. And so I'm optimistic, you know.
Even Chris Christie, when he came out and said a lot about addiction in New Jersey and his family and how it is a disease, like a Republican saying that, I was like, if you can get that, you're getting the awareness out there.
This is a bipartisan issue.
Yeah, very much so.
That's the cool thing. It's not a left or a right thing.
But I was like, I know why Chris Christie's a huge ass, but that was a big moment that I thought was. Pretty big. He's a huge ass. But that was a big moment for him to come out.
He has
and say
a huge ass?
I think both. No. Column A, column B. Yeah, column B.
Pun intended.
Come on. He is an ass, has an ass. But I thought that was a brave thing to do because you usually, it was a just say no to drugs in the 80s and we're not too far away from that. And now he's saying, no, it's a disease. We need to work on it. You know, that's a big change.
Yeah,
the
it
last
is.
Thing he that's needs the is thing. The munchies. So.
My Lord have mercy.
Yeah. I know. That's true. He has lost some weight, though, right? Right? I mean, since
I just want him to be stuck in traffic for his whole life.
Yeah, I know. Well, karma, right? Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Karma. No pun intended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, so I think we what we've established here is this problem, a lot of problem for kids, a lot of difficulties for kids. And I think that's something we need to focus on, you know, and I bet you guys focus on that in your show, right? I mean, yes. Tell us a little bit about your show, Answers for the Family.
Now, Answers for the Family started, it's now been, I think, 8 years, and it started It started when I was getting a lot of calls from parents, and this is during the time in which all of a sudden all of our homes were no longer worth any money. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody was upside down with their homes. People didn't have a lot of cash anymore, and parents were calling saying, my child has run away, I don't know what to do, and I would say, well, here, contact this educational consultant, they'll help you find a program for them. Because the parents would go, well, you know, this is the seventh time they've run away and we don't know what to do. And I think you need a plan, you know, get somebody to help you to get a plan. Well, they would come back to me and go, never mind, leave them out there. I go, what do you mean? And they'd say, well, we can't afford any of this. You know, we used to be, we had $200,000 equity in our home. We'd take out a loan. We would then pay for our child to go to treatment and everything would be great. They didn't have it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what? I need to get information out to people. How's the best way I can do that? And I went to a seminar that was being put on by a futurist. And he said, in the future.
I love futurists.
Yes. Yeah. And he said, in the future, all radio will be internet based. And I said, what a great idea.
What a cool futurist.
Yeah. Yeah. And I said, that's a great idea. I'm going to look into this. And I looked into it, and I found Sam.
Wow.
And Sam had just started this show just a few months before.
Wow.
He had started
that's
this
true.
Network.
The station.
Yeah. And it was great. And so that's kind of how it got started was, how can we get information out to people so that they know what is out there? And again, as Matt was saying, that there are communities out there. There is... ways in which you can go about this to help your kids, and it doesn't always cost money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
and then, I mean, just think about it: 8 years worth of shows, guys. You guys can just go and see that Alan's. Your show has evolved just like all the shows on the station, you know. And but no, I think by far you have the best co-host right
Absolutely.
Now, in Matt, you know, and. So, yeah, you guys have to listen, and I think after this show, people will realize, yeah, we're staying tuned for another hour after this one. So, okay, well, so now that we established who our guests are and what they do and stuff, we'll get to the real reason why they're here, and that is, no, really, but we sort of, like, sucked them into it because we don't really have a choice. We had, the elections this year is probably one of the most crucial in many years. And everybody's involved, you know. And like I said before, I mean, the social media is full of this stuff. I'm just reading that Paul Ryan is turning away from Trump, and he says he'll focus on preserving the party's hold on Congress, which is a good idea because.
But is he going to not endorse him? No, he's still endorsing him, which is such
I don't know.
Crap.
But that's for today. That's for now. Tomorrow things could change. Who would have believed that Ryan's going to turn away from him after he endorsed him?
Well, I'm still thinking it's not really a turnaround if you still endorse him. I think Paul Ryan, though, has a really hard job. I think I do feel really bad. He looks like the Munster kid, and I don't like his policies. But he has a really, really hard job. And he is trying to balance, and I think he's really disgusted. And I think – but it would have been more
like
of
a – like most Republicans,
yeah,
I would
but it
say.
Would have been more of an impact if, like John McCain, he had said, and the Utah – you know, the entire Utah Republican government in Congress were and the governor were the first to say, I take back my endorsement. And that's because Mormonism, you want to have a good standing citizen. And they went on air and was like, I don't care if I'm Republican. I can't look my 15-year-old daughter in the face and say this. So Utah was the first state to back out. They're like the upcoming cool guys.
Yeah, there you go.
And really,
yeah.
It's like Utah. Okay, Jess. I think Ryan, if he had just said I unendorsed, that's something. This is just saying I'm going to back out a little still.
But we still have time. I think he may do that,
well,
too.
Well, he should take a big step.
Because, what do you guys think? You guys probably watch at least part of the debate and stuff. Alan, what did you think?
Well, I think the biggest issue that we're looking at is that how is this affecting people emotionally? You know, that would be that, you know, that we're
terribly
now, exactly. We're dealing with people, so we now have leaders that are creating more anxiety.
Oh,
they're creating mental health issues by focusing on the worst possible thing they can, and in many cases, it's not even accurate. And I'll give you an example for both sides, which is we need to go in and consider the source. So now there have been things that are put out there. One, I got sent a picture that was of Trump and a person with a KKK hood. And it says KKK and or the Grand Wizard of the KKK and a bunch of other crazies come out and support Trump. And there was no other message. So I clicked on it. I read it. And when you read through it, there was no named sources for any of the other crazies. And when you got to the bottom, what it said was, and then I found the person, the head wizard, the grand wizard or whatever, and he said that it's absolutely untrue and that he has not spoken a word to support anybody. So the author of this knew that it was wrong, but he still put that picture out there because they're trying to elicit emotional response. Right. Now, to be fair, I want to bring it up in regards to the other side. There's also the one with Hillary now that says that Hillary is quoted as saying that she wants to have a drone kill Julian Assange of WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks, really? Is that what she said?
Yeah.
No, but she didn't say it.
Okay, but well, she did, but it's taken completely out of context.
Right.
Okay, in 2010, there was a security meeting, and in that meeting, they said that it is possible that WikiLeaks will be leaking a list of all of our undercover agents all around the world. And she said, can't we just drone him?
Oh, okay.
Okay, it's completely out of context, yeah. But the people saying it now are saying that it's because he has something on her right now.
Oh, okay.
So this is what's eliciting these emotional responses,
it's
not even true.
It's also like, to be honest, that's even more detailed. Like in the debate last night, I was saying how everyone cringed. It was the vagueness of America's going to shit. It wasn't even a detail of like, she said this. It was Trump saying like, we are in hell. And that emotional response, how can you even respond to that? Like, and he was like, when that black man stood up, of course, he's like, inner cities are bombing. You're going to be shot walking out of your door. And that the anxiety that creates, and it's not even details. He's just like catastrophically describing the earth. You know what I mean? So I'm like, why? That can't be good for anybody. I don't know.
No. But, you know, I mean, but last night he did a scorched earth strategy.
Yeah.
I mean, he pulled out all of Clinton's accusers, brought them to the debate. And just pulled it out of the hat, you know, 2 minutes into the debate.
Yeah, but that kind of ended kind of quickly.
Yeah, it did. But the point is, let me tell you something. And when I posted about, I think the election's already been decided because I felt he was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, and then I took a break and apparently he started doing better as time progressed. But I just said from this, I'm cringing here. Mm-hmm. I don't believe he's saying this. I can't even watch this anymore.
So, like,
I walked out.
Okay, everyone did. Everyone watched it from another room and turned it up. Literally, every woman I know was in the other room with their head in a pillow. And there's an article in the New York Times that came out today, and it's by Lindy West, who's really great. And the big thing that a lot of people are talking about is when she started to go up to a person to answer, he, for some reason, stood up, if you watch it, and walked behind her and then just stood there. And it made every woman I know and men very, very uncomfortable, especially because of what we heard on the bus. Right. And even like a person, a body language expert was on MSNBC and said, that's pre-predatorial movement right there. Mm-hmm. So she said he is hot fear and cold dread and a pit in your stomach. He is every deadbeat hookup and every boss that thinks you owe him something. And it's like, as a woman, that's where I connected.
Right.
The body language was so uncomfortable that's where the energy and anxiety came from.
Right.
He made me feel like, and Nicole Wallace, who's the communications director for George W. Bush, said, I would have called 911 if I were on the sidewalk and someone had done that to me.
Right.
And
right.
I would have straight up run, because that's what you get in a parking lot alone for a woman at 2 a.m. and I'm leaving a club and there's someone that's that close. It was such a bad call on his part. Mm-hmm. It'll be brought up. I'm telling you right now, Future Blog at Futuristic, this will be the moment you talk about.
That's right.
It's the looming.
It was creepy.
Yeah,
and the word that came to mind for me was he was lurking.
Looming and lurking, they're saying. Looming and predatorially. You know, it wasn't, they're calling him the Slender Man, you know, how he like creeps up behind you. But it was odd to do the day after you talked about sexual assaulting women.
Right.
To then go right behind her. It was almost like, it was just bad. I think that'll be the image that emotionally connected with women the most. It wasn't the words. It was that lurking, creepy. Because we've all had a guy like that. We've all had that guy. And it was, every woman I've spoken to said it was just creepy. Creepy.
To me, it's just surprising. Matt, what do you think? We haven't asked you yet.
I'm blown away by it all. And I'm thinking to myself, I've got a young daughter.
Yeah.
And she's watching and hearing this information, and to sort of piggyback on Alan, how does she decimate what is truth? What is not truth? How do we, as people going online and Googling things, how do we vet things? Mm-hmm. How do we determine what's? I mean,
he was saying anything.
You could say anything.
Yeah, he lied about everything. Yeah.
And what is, you know, we open the show with talking about Columbus, and we have this, you know, this history that we teach, and then we have another history of truth and what's not truth, and we're raising children to hear these two sides, and I don't know. I'm having a hard time as a fairly educated mm-hmm. person knowing what's truth and what's not truth. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine a 13-year-old, a 16-year-old, a 21-year-old mm-hmm. being able to figure out what the heck is going on here and what's real, what's not real.
And even just to bring up my point with what you said, what she brought that up is that there's a new Trumpism thing going on where they see an increase in bullying in kids, and it's because children are watching behaviors, even a physicality of him coming up behind her, and they're saying that there's a huge increase in schools of bullying because that's what they're seeing. So they're repeating it. So even children listening is, I think, the number one reason this scares me so much.
Yeah. I also, the other thing that fascinates me is this idea of groupthink. And, you know, Alan and I talked about this morning a little bit, that you almost have to think as a group, thinking independently and, you know, questioning some of this stuff. Really, you have to either be on one side or the other, and you have to be very strong about having anger and emotion, because if you try to have independent thought, you're very isolated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fascinated with all the human behavior stuff. Obviously, it's my background. It's Alan's.
Right. Then you see that groups work. Groups work for people.
Yeah, it's safe.
Right,
it's
right.
safe.
You know, yeah. Jane Goodall said today, again, his behavior was a lot like, it's human behavior, male chimpanzees trying to gain hierarchy in the class. They kind of run around and get behind you and scare you. And it was like, that was very primal.
And it worked.
And it I don't know, it backfired for women, I think.
Yeah.
It backfired.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, but I think it backfired for women.
But it made you uncomfortable? It made
no,
me uncomfortable?
No, I'm saying the way he did it made me, it backfired, yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, everybody knows I'm a conservative. I wanted the Republicans to win, but I really have to admit at this point, we just have to wait out the next 4 years because it's not going to happen. And I mean, to me, what's amazing is that we even think he's going to win, that some people think he might win. You know, he tells her, if I win, I'm going to send you to jail, put you in jail.
That's dictatorship. That is a dictatorship.
I mean, and that's intimidation also.
That's right in front of everybody. That's what you see in horrible dictatorships when they take and despotism, banana republics. They will take the opponent and throw him in jail. That is not a democracy.
No. Well, and he's republic? Just a bully.
Yeah.
And
I think, that's what they're called.
And I think everybody that realizes this now realizes that. And the thing is this, look, he's alienated women.
Right? Black,
Hispanics,
Muslims,
black,
immigrants.
Everybody.
Yeah, who's left? White, uneducated
exactly.
men.
And they're not going to win the election alone.
There's not enough of them.
No. Okay, I mean, women are going to be his biggest obstacle, I think, to winning.
And what I said is if you
because
don't.
Because it's half the population.
I said, it's more than half. I said, if you don't outright condemn his words as a Republican, you've lost political currency with women, and that, my friends, is lethal. Yeah. You cannot win without women. You can't.
Sam,
that's true.
I've got a scoop for you.
Yes.
On your show, I'm announcing it right now. I'm changing my name to none of the above, and I will become our next president.
I would write you in. No, I'm with her.
Wow.
No, I told Sam, I think like 10% every year's Homer Simpson is like written in. Or like Bart Simpson. It's like, oh,
probably, right?
Yeah.
All the right write-in ones.
A lot of people wanted Pence after the thing to move up to be taking the ticket. And then the Pence thing was interesting.
Yeah.
He said, well, Pence said something different about Syria. And he goes, oh, really? Well, we haven't discussed it. You haven't discussed with your vice president Syria? I wrote that on Twitter. And he was like, having a time. I mean, that's insane. So they do not seem to like each other at all.
No.
So he said, oh, well, I disagree. And that was kind of a dig at Pence. But Pence digged at Trump after the assault radio leak. So those two aren't happy either together.
Yeah.
Too many alphas in the...
Yeah, the primates. Right. They're like banging their chest.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Goodall's article was really funny. She was like, that's what you see with a primate. A
yeah, chip. Exactly. And then she's just going to walk in with the presidency and that'll be it. You know. So, okay, well, we only have a few minutes left. Tori, anything else you wanted to add? I mean, there's a lot more to talk about.
Yeah, here
about.
I'll say something.
Yeah.
Something good.
Okay.
I liked the moderators. I thought Anderson Cooper and Martha Raddatz did a really good job. I think they could have pushed a little harder, but they reminded me of parents with two bickering little children. And I thought they kept to message. And I think Lester Hall, I thought, just disappeared that first presidential debate. And I thought Cooper held him through the fire.
Yeah, Anderson is always there. He's
he really
present.
Is. And he said what I liked is, I think he should have pushed more, but he was like, what you said in those tapes was sexual assault. Do you understand that?
Right.
And then apparently, I didn't hear it because I was like listening so hard, but apparently Trump said no.
Right.
So, I mean, that's what every woman wanted to hear him say, I was wrong. Right. And he held him to the fire, and I think he lost that opportunity.
That's true. And that's all in the first 5 minutes of the debate, you know?
What a tough job that is to moderate.
I was
going to
say, how nerve-wracking. But for her, Martha was like, please, you've had enough time. And they also added up the amount of talking between the two, and they were almost identical.
Almost identical.
And Trump's like, oh, she got more time.
Right, exactly.
She got more time.
So, yeah, so that keeps happening. And, yeah, I mean, look, the thing is that, and she doesn't have really big competition here, so she's going to just walk away with this, and we just have to, like Ryan said, focus on keeping the checks and balances here, you know?
Yeah, and the other thing what I thought was very funny was when the Muslim woman spoke and said, how do you deal with Islamophobia? And his answer was just Islamophobic. Uh-huh. And he was like, Muslims need to report. So then on Twitter, Muslims reporting started trending, and it was like, Muslims support a crazy person attacking, threatening a Secretary of State.
That was
funny.
The hashtag.
Yeah,
wow.
Muslims report. Good for them.
Wow. So, okay, so finally, guys, how can people find you? How can they get a hold of you? Alan, if somebody wants help with their kids and stuff, how can they find you?
Well, as far as finding me at Westshield, you can go to westshield.com. That is our adolescent services company as well as our investigation company. If you want to listen to the show or listen to any of our past shows, you can go to answersforthefamily.com. And whatever the subject is if it relates to family, if it relates to making your family life better, we probably have a show on it.
Mm.
There you go, man.
You can always reach me on my cell phone, 562-225-4093.
I love that he does this, people.
Yeah.
I think that's the coolest thing in the world.
24/7, I'm available. And obviously our website, www.bettyford.org.
Awesome. And you guys can't miss any of this because we're going to keep having you guys back because you're amazing. And maybe we'll do like a standing for Mondays or something.
I do like them.
Like a hair appointment.
Love it.
You know?
Love it. I'm getting a bouffant.
Yeah. And I learned today. Thank you, Sam. I learned what necking is.
Yeah, me too.
There
I
you
did
go,
too.
Right?
I think I knew there it, but I go. Thought it involved the neck. Is it not always just the neck?
No.
You can
not
make
it.
Okay, so necking is just the phrase.
Yeah, like if you. I guess this is pretty old, right? Because I think they even
like
said
Greece.
Necking in like Happy Days. And that
yeah,
was even
Happy Days was
me.
Based on the 60s, though.
Yeah, no, Happy Days was more in the 50s, wasn't
well,
it?
Well, 50s, 60s,
Wouldn't
yeah.
you? Okay, I guess it was 60s.
So necking isn't, I'm picturing people like just kissing
rubbing
necks. Yeah, rubbing necks. It's
yeah,
not like that.
Not at all. Yeah, not
it's
not
a giraffe thing.
It's totally make.
Like a goose thing.
Come here, Alan, show me.
Yeah.
I mean, literally the translation would be making out.
Okay, got it. Okay,
making out.
Hooking up.
Hooking up. Which is another one that... When that one first came out,
no
for
one
young
knew what
people,
the hell it meant.
Young people
it was
knew.
Connecting.
Yeah,
and older people didn't know.
Yeah, older people. So we thought it was connecting, and when we as older people used hooking up,
we
then
would get me like,
our
Whoa.
Kids would look at us like, no,
yeah. right?
It's
exactly.
not a phone call.
Yeah, so it was a, sort of a generational
yes.
thing there, right?
True.
Well, guys, awesome show. Thank you everybody for listening. Stay tuned, please, because you're gonna get these two for another hour. Tori, thank you.
Absolutely.
As always. And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
All right.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.